Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. According to a new study from the National Alliance for Caregiving and ARP, the profile for the family caregiver in America is changing as our population changes. While the typical family caregiver is a 49-year-old woman who takes care of a relative, caregivers on the whole are becoming as diverse as our American population is. Our topic today is caregiving, and my guests with expertise in this area are Alex Crawford, family consultant with Coast Caregiver Resource Center, Millie Tyler, who is a family caregiver and an advocate, and Kathy Brody, marriage and family therapist in private practice in Paso Robles in Cambria for over 30 years. Today's show has been pre-recorded, and you won't have call-in availability, but I think we're going to be answering your questions well enough. You won't have to worry about that. So I'm going to, first, I want to welcome all three of you for being here today.
Thank you for joining me.
And I can't think of a more important topic to be talking about than caregiving. That's certainly something that, you know, has affected my life, and I'm seeing more and more for those of us that are anywhere over 30 is affecting more and more of our lives. So thank you all for being here. Mm-hmm. And how about if I start with you, Alice?
Yes.
And with the Central Coast, or with the Coast Caregiver Resource Center, talk a little bit about what that organization is.
Thank you. About 30 years ago, the California legislature created a network of 11 caregiver resource centers across California. And the purpose of the program was to provide resources to families who were taking care of an adult with a neurological impairment. At that time, there were programs that focused on the families taking care of children with Down syndrome and cerebral palsy and other brain impairments, but there wasn't a program focused on adults with cognitive impairments. And this program is very unique because the client is the family caregiver. Mm-hmm. Most programs serve the person with the impairment or the diagnosis, but we're looking at the family caregiver, typically the spouse or the adult child or a friend, an informal person that steps up to the task of caregiving, often with very little experience. And our program is targeted for the middle class. Our services are free of charge, and we are funded through the state budget, as well as grants that provide the funding for us to provide direct services to our clients. And those services are a respite grant. Respite is a word we use to refer to giving the caregiver a break, some temporary relief, someone coming in to relieve the caregiver for a few hours perhaps, and so the caregiver doesn't feel like they can never have a moment to themselves. So respite is one of the services that we offer, and we also provide support groups for caregivers, and we provide professional counseling with therapists in the community who we are contracted with to work one-on-one with the caregivers.
I mentioned in my intro that there was, you know, that there was a survey in this study that really has been highlighting how the role and who is becoming a caregiver is really changing in the United States. And I'd really like to hear from each of you about what your experience is and whether or not you've seen that occur and how that's occurring just in your involvement with caregivers. And I'll start with you, Kathy.
Well, the thing I would say is that oftentimes it is the spouse or the partner who is mm-hmm. the caregiver. But I see more and more adult children, and that creates some challenges for the family because the adult children, the siblings might not agree all the time on how to take care of mom or dad. But also some of the issues, and Alice, you might know, be able to address this more. I think some of the issues are it's not elderly. And I think the caregivers are getting younger. I mean, I think some of the impairment is occurring earlier. And that is a challenge.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily always dementia. It can be chronic illness. It couldn't be other types of situations, veterans coming back from Iraq. That could be a challenge. So I think there's a variety of caregiving situations. We need to be open to that.
Yes. Alice.
I agree completely.
Just threw out a lot, huh?
Since your involvement with the caregiving organization that you're with, have you seen the change? Have you seen changes in who you're serving as caregivers?
I've been a family caregiver for 25 years now with Coast Caregivers. And years ago, it was about 6 years following a diagnosis that the caregiver would start looking for resources and reach out and contact our program. And now we are receiving calls early on, questions like, my loved one is starting to be forgetful. What should I do? Where can I go? Is there a support group that I can go to? I think that there's a general knowledge in society about illnesses and aging, and when people are right at the beginning of caregiving, they realize it and are getting on board with resources right away.
And for you, Millie?
I was in my late 60s when I, or mid 60s when I started to care for my husband who had Alzheimer's. I see earlier ages just in families and in other types of caregiving also. I have a 50-year-old son who's caring for his 44-year-old wife with stage 3 breast cancer. And just what it does to a family, and it's I see it.
Yeah, so you know, when we're talking about this topic, it really is across the spectrum.
Yes,
in
it
terms
is.
Of for caregiving with your organization, Alice, because of the neurological deficit that people are incurring, there's the memory loss is huge there. We're seeing an increase in Alzheimer's, or at least an increase in the diagnosis of Alzheimer's or memory disorders. And there's expected now that there's going to be even more. We're not talking about a short illness.
No, we're not. Our program really is unique because it's focusing on those cognitive impairments. And those can include any of the dementias. I would like to make a clarification that dementia is not a disease. It's a general term, and it refers to a cognitive decline in a person's reasoning, judgment, memory, and personality. And there might be some 50 or more diseases that have a dementia component. Probably the most widespread would be Alzheimer's disease, but Alzheimer's is not the only cause of dementia. And other cognitive conditions can be stroke, Parkinson's, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, multiple sclerosis, vascular dementia, brain injury, brain tumors. So we have a wide range of situations that do come to us for support, and that's the focus of the caregiver resource centers in California, and that's mainly what we're talking about today. But I wanted to make the distinction that caregiving is an even broader spectrum of physical illnesses and conditions that maybe don't have a dementia component, but people that are listening can easily find themselves in a caregiving situation.
I think one of the things that's being pointed out by a lot of people that are writing about caregiving now is that there are a number of individuals that are really getting, especially with the economy downturn that was experienced in the 2000s, around 2008, 2009, with children coming back home from college, not being able to find the kind of jobs that they had, and then also having parents or loved ones in the family that they were trying to support.
You're really talking about more multi-generational family life. I was also going to point out that I do think, and I want the listeners to be aware of this, is that I think people are a little bit more receptive and open to diagnoses, and I think that's great because maybe 40 years ago or longer, people would hide their loved ones who might not be thinking as clearly. Now, I think caregivers are much more open and receptive to what's out there, classes, workshops, and that's kind of exciting because they don't have to be alone, and they carry that burden sometimes alone. So we want to remind people that it is okay to talk about all this.
How do you the services that you were able to find, Millie, how did you go about making decisions to reach out?
Well, I think after you receive a loved one's diagnosis that it takes you a little while to process that. When my husband was first diagnosed, I was still working full-time. And somewhere along the line, he was able to communicate to his sister that he did not want to be alone. And so... family members and friends stepped in to make it possible that I could complete the work that I had committed myself to. And I still remember retiring one day and waking up the next morning trying to wrap my head around the fact that I was a full-time caregiver. And it took a while before I reached out. I would say some months, and I knew that I would not be able to do this alone. And so I visited the Alzheimer's Association, and they forwarded me on to Alice, and Alice became my team captain, I would say. I finally felt like, okay, somebody's going to watch out for me. That was something my husband had always had my back. Alice had my back. And I began to attend a support group. I think it takes a tremendous amount of courage for someone to attend a support group. You have no idea what's going to happen there. The first few times I did go, I just sat and cried, because it was a safe place and it was okay. And I then became a client. One of the first things Alice had me do was figure out some goals for my life, for me, in this whole process, so that I would not become lost in it. And we listed those goals. And then she helped me develop an action plan to make those goals become a reality. And that was a process that we repeated numerous times over the years. I also was very blessed by the respite grants and the individual counseling to deal with the emotional impact and the stress of becoming a daily 24-hour-a-day caregiver.
Did you have other family,
I
Millie,
did have
that lived near you?
At the time, I really did not. My daughter ended up moving back from another state to the area to be closer to help as the illness progressed. My son lived a couple of hundred miles away, and he would come and stay every few weeks for 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. And I had a strong church family who really became very involved and really supported both my husband and myself. And so those things were just, they were wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. And Kathy, do you find that what Millie's describing about strong ties with the church community and the kind of support that she got, is that common for caregivers?
You know, it's hard to say whether it's common. I think that it's the whole spectrum. There are people who have a lot of resources internally in terms mm-hmm. of who they are, as well as externally in their community, and they have built a life that really lends itself to that kind of support. But that's on one extreme, and the
exactly.
other extreme is a person who is
Absolutely.
Doing it entirely all on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other aspect of this that sometimes can be challenging for people, if this is a second marriage or a third mm-hmm. marriage mm-hmm.
yeah.
and there are stepchildren involved, or then it gets
messy.
Somewhat, it can get very messy mm-hmm. and convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a whole spectrum. There are people who are doing this entirely on their own. Mm-hmm. But I think the point, Millie, that you made that's important is that it takes time to adapt. It takes mm-hmm. time to mm-hmm. adjust to being a caregiver and knowing what resources are out there and even knowing yourself and what mm-hmm. you want.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us on Central Coast Voices here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio, my guests are Alice Crawford, family consultant with Coast Caregiver Resource Center, Millie Tyler, who was a family caregiver and advocate, Kathy Brody, marriage and family therapist in private practice in Paso Robles and Cambria. And our topic today is caregiving. And Alice, with regard to caregiving, can you obviously had a connection with Millie, and Millie was able to find you through a referral. When physicians in the community make a diagnosis, or when they see patients and their loved ones and they know that there's caregiving involved, do they make referrals to your organization, to other organizations that can provide the kind of resources that Millie needed?
It's the rare occasion that I get a referral directly from a doctor's office. Mm-hmm. I wish we would get more referrals mm-hmm. from the medical community. I think, for the most part, families are hearing about us perhaps through home health agencies.
Okay.
The medical social workers provide us with a lot of referrals. They're going into the home, they're seeing the situation, and they often realize that the caregiver needs more than what the medical establishment is going to provide for them. There's no insurance program that pays for respite care.
Right.
And so it's either out of pocket or perhaps a grant through our program.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the respite care grant through your program. What does that look like and what does it provide?
It's funded through federal money that comes through the Area Agency on Aging. And in our community, we are able to offer 48 hours of respite care per family per fiscal year. Generally, families use it for a few hours, maybe 3 or 4 hours once a week. The caregiver can plan something on their calendar, something to look forward to. The worker comes in, professional caregiver through a respite agency, stays with the loved one. Caregiver has time to themselves. Their grant can last for maybe 3 or 4 months on a weekly basis. We let the family decide how they want to use those 48 hours. They may need to go out of town and have several 12-hour shifts, perhaps, or mm-hmm. whatever, however that's going to work out. but in some cases, it's just a drop in the bucket. For other cases, it's a lifesaver.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Millie was talking about it previously, how you used the respite care and how invaluable that was for you.
Well, when I first received a respite grant, I used that time often to pay bills, to run around, do errands. And I pretty quickly learned that that really wasn't doing a whole lot for me except ticking off the tasks on my list. And over time, I learned that that was my time to, I would call it, to feed my soul. And I learned to walk along the beach, going to a local nursery and just walking through the flowers, going to the fabric store and looking at the beautiful fabrics. That was something I had done with my career. There were just so many things, meeting up with a friend, talking about something besides Alzheimer's and caregiving. Mm-hmm. So those were some of the things that when I walked back in the door of my home, not knowing really what I was going home to necessarily, what sort of a mood would be there or a behavior would be playing out that day, I was strengthened in just doing something for myself.
Millie, what kind of work did you do?
I was a interior design consultant, and I was a general manager for a business here in San Luis Obispo that was a home decor and furniture store.
Because you mentioned the words losing me. Mm-hmm. When, and so that's got to be a powerful feeling when you, how were you able to cope with the resentment? Or was there any?
You know, I must say, and I would like to preface what I'm going to say by saying this is my journey, and it isn't necessarily anyone else's. But my husband's father had Alzheimer's disease. I think before he was ever diagnosed, we suspected just, you know, signs at first are very sporadic. You make excuses for them. Sometimes you think you're the one who has a little problem. And I just didn't have time to ask why. I thought, okay, I need to work with this. And as this illness progressed, it became very apparent to me that I was the one responsible to take care of myself and to make wise choices, to eventually even begin to prepare for a life after my beloved husband was gone. And I needed to do some grief work. I leaned very hard into my faith, but you experience such a loss of freedom. I think that was one of the most difficult things to really come to terms with. Mm. Imagine two things: never being alone, never really being able to be alone in your house unless someone comes and takes your loved one for a period of time, or never really being able to go someplace, just come and go freely.
Mm-hmm. Moving at your own pace.
Moving at your own pace and really just relaxing in your own home. That's a real challenge. Mm-hmm. I had cared for my mother after she had strokes, and I remember that. I look back on that time, and I consider that now, that was my boot camp. and I learned a lot during that time. But I also, one of the things I learned was that you know, these illnesses don't have to take two people down. They don't have to take a family mm-hmm. down. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't anyone else in this whole equation who had the ability to change mm-hmm. besides myself.
In Millie's statement, it doesn't have to take a whole family down, does it? Does caregiving take a family down? Can it?
Yes, I would say it can really compromise a family system and a family balance, and appropriately so. I don't mean that in a critical way. It is really overwhelming to take care of somebody, and like you're saying, you're the one. The caregiver is sometimes mm-hmm. the one who can control themselves, because there's no control over the day-to-day existence at that point. Mm-hmm. But it can really compromise a family unit. Mm-hmm. It's very challenging in that way. But it also can strengthen it. That's what, mm-hmm. Millie, you're talking about.
Absolutely.
And I think you were saying, Chris, about the gamut of emotions, the strong emotions that people feel, and how do you manage that? The frustration, the irritation, the anxiety, the what-ifs, the resentment. How do you manage all that? And you manage it sometimes by remembering the joy, by remembering the love, by dealing with the memories. I think sometimes caregivers just have moments, just 30 seconds, that give them a lift that can last hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a friend whose husband had Parkinson's, advanced stages, and had dementia with the Parkinson's that got extremely bad. And for her, she said one of the biggest challenges as his disease progressed was the fact that she would feel so resentful and so loving simultaneously.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And those were so conflicting for her. Mm-hmm. Of just wanting it to stop, and yet at the same time mm-hmm. having full knowledge of what that meant if it did stop, mm-hmm.
right?
That
mm-hmm.
he would no longer be there.
Absolutely.
And we have a term now, mm-hmm. ambiguous loss,
yes.
which addresses those conflicting emotions that are completely opposite, but they're both present simultaneously.
Yeah.
And that's huge for caregivers to wrap their head around and to continue to cope. One of the other factors that we're so concerned about is that caregiving really takes a toll on the caregiver's personal health.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Their physical health mm-hmm. and well-being, their emotional health, their mental health. And certainly their financial security.
Mm-hmm.
Millie, you stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
Adult children may be at an age where they are building up their income for their own retirement, and that often is cut short. Those long-term family planning mechanisms fall by the wayside. It's devastating on a number of levels, and some families are resilient and rally, and other people are not that fortunate. I think it's important to focus on what the caregiver's expectation happens to be for them, not only for themselves, but their expectation of their loved one, and the journey that really sets up for them.
You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas to Paso Robles, 95.1 Lompoc, 90.9 Santa Ynez, 89.9 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at kcbx.org. 82% of today's caregivers in America care for one person who is likely either living with them or within 20 minutes away. 60% are female. And the typical caregiver is a 69-year-old female relative caregiving for her mother. Additionally, 59% of all caregivers hold jobs in addition to their caregiving, and 34% are employed full-time. Alice Crawford, family consultant with Coast Caregiver Resource Center, Millie Tyler, family caregiver and advocate, and Kathy Brody, marriage and family therapist in private practice in Paso Robles and Camry, are here with me today, and they're sharing their expertise on the topic of caregiving and local resources available. Today's show has been pre-recorded, so we don't have a call-in, and those statistics really spoke to what you were talking about, Alice, which is that, you know, for, it's happening younger, even though, you know, the statistically it still is for individuals that are somewhat older. It's dropping down, and we're, you know, and people are working longer. You know, I mean, the reality is that myth of the people
65
retirement. Being the retirement age, it's not anymore. And then when you look at what happens within the economy, mm-hmm. of people losing their investments or not doing well, or losing jobs earlier and having to shift around, we come to a situation where those things just really have a tremendous impact. So really speaks to what you were talking about. What do caregivers need?
They, on many levels, they need education. Mm. Caregivers, the best treatment for a person with dementia is an educated caregiver. Mm-hmm. And caregivers need to understand what it is they're dealing with. They need to advocate for their loved one in the medical community. Oftentimes, the caregiver feels like they know more about their loved one's situation than a medical professional that sees them for 5 minutes, mm-hmm. for, you know, every 3 or 6 months. So caregivers have to do a lot of research and learn what to watch for, the do's, and there are do's and don'ts of caregiving, mm-hmm. what to do and what not to do. Yeah. If a person has dementia, do not argue. Mm-hmm. Do not
avoid logic.
Scold. Don't try to be logical and explain things over and over. They need to be educated, and I think that the support groups fill that role to
Absolutely.
A very significant extent. Mm-hmm. I facilitate 3 support groups for caregivers once a month, and caregivers come, they learn from one another, they realize they're not alone, mm-hmm. that other people have similar situations. Every situation is unique, but there are some common threads, and wonderful friendships develop,
yes,
through these support
absolutely.
groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a strong advocate for going to a support group to learn and to get that emotional support that is helpful.
Yeah, I think it's important for the listeners to remember that you do not have to reinvent the wheel. It is really critical. There are resources out there.
Absolutely.
They're not going to solve everything, and they're not going to take away so many of the challenges that you're going through. But it is really important not to reinvent the wheel. There is information out there, mm-hmm. and support, and you can get it.
Sometimes it seems difficult to access, I think. So how can people begin to access information?
I think that living in San Luis Obispo, mm-hmm. community is a big plus.
Absolutely.
Because we're a small hometown, if you will, community. And mm-hmm. it's been my experience that if a person makes a phone call to some program, whatever it may be, it might be the Alzheimer's Association, it might be Hospice of SLO, it might be the hotline, and those of us that answer those calls, even if we don't have the exact answer to that person's question, we will say, well, try this, try that, this is, you know, why don't you, I think if you go in this direction, that might be helpful, and a couple of phone calls are going to start to put that person in the right direction.
What could we do better in this community, do you think, to disseminate information or to build resources that would support caregivers?
I think it'd be very helpful to have. I know we have this information at senior centers or YMCA. I mean, even and not even senior centers necessarily. I think sometimes we're looking at the sandwich generation,
right,
people who are raising kids as well as taking care of their parents or siblings. And to me, it should be everywhere. I think it'd be great to have it in markets. I could flyers everywhere. And luckily we have a lot of local newspapers, whether they're throwaways or not. They're all red. And so I think that the more information out there, the better.
Yeah, there's a senior guide that
Area
Agency on Aging puts out. And I've had younger people tell me, you know what, they should be making this for people in their 40s and 50s, because we're the ones that are really helping to find the resources. I didn't know, you know, these are going out to senior communities, but I didn't know this existed. It'd be really nice to have in a different place. So.
More and more information out there.
Well, a lot of people are finding us on the internet now.
Yes.
And I think that's very positive.
Yes.
And it also speaks to the younger generation that's the modality that they are using to get answers to their questions.
And there is so much information online. And I think that's one thing that some caregivers, either because of transportation problems or because they're raising kids as well as caretaking, they can get access this information online. And there's lots online.
The California Caregiver Resource Centers, the 11 regions that cover all of California, their website is www.caregiver.org. And that's a good start. Any listener who has knows of a situation anywhere in California has access to a caregiver resource center in their area.
In the work that you do, Alice, you mentioned actually that caregivers need to take care of themselves and their own health. There have been statistics that have shown that it's not infrequent that caregivers actually end up having a life event earlier than the person that they're caring for.
That's very, very true.
Yeah.
And it is a sad reality. Yes, that happens.
I think people, it's important to do the best you can to set goals for yourself, like Millie, you were talking about, and to be as realistic and reasonable as you can in your expectations of yourself. But there's such an emphasis on self-care with caregivers, and I think sometimes that's totally unrealistic. I hate to say that out loud, but it is so hard to take care of yourself under some of these circumstances.
Yes,
so I would ask people to really chunk it down. Self-care can be being able to take a five-minute shower.
That's
right. Not with the drought, but, I mean, being able to take a shower.
Yeah,
that's you can address that, Millie.
Simple things. Very simple things, I would say for 2 years, perhaps longer, my shower was 2 minutes.
Yes. Yeah.
2 minutes. And to me, that's that's self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Self-care does not need to be elaborate. Mm-hmm. It needs to be consistent.
And doable.
It does need to be doable. And I don't know. One of the things I really learned over this journey was to lighten up. I knew I could be a good caregiver, a perfect caregiver. I really had no idea what that meant, and I knew that was so way beyond my reach that it wasn't, it just wasn't achievable. Life isn't perfect. And to learn to be to relax a little bit in it. I think it can be so overwhelming, especially when you begin to experience the unusual and challenging and bizarre behaviors that someone with dementia suffers with, that you can realize that they are afraid much of the time. And if we can relax, it didn't take me too long to figure out that my demeanor counted a lot in this whole equation. And if I could put a smile on my face and have some form of excitement about what we were going to do that day, that day went a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. And there was joy to be found in that day. Maybe you were driving along on a country road and squirrels crossed the road. And just simple things became joyful things. I also found something else that was a real self-care thing for myself was journaling. Some people don't like to journal. I'd never necessarily been a big journaler, but I could pour out my innermost feelings in 5 or 10 minutes, and I could release those toxic things, you know, daily instead of allowing them to build up over time. And I could also write down some wonderful thing that happened that day, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. And that was all within your reach.
It was. That was achievable. Yes. It took maybe 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But it was something that I found I could do. And I didn't need to worry, was somebody going to read these? You know, mm-hmm. it just was very helpful.
Were you able to write how you were feeling in the moment?
Oh, merciful goodness. Yes. Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, hey, I'm afraid. Today was really tough. I'm afraid for the future. What does the future hold for us? Mm-hmm. Those sorts of things. You know, wow, I saw a new behavior today. Or, wow, I think I have that behavior pretty much figured out. And I'm feeling sort of comfortable, and you're thrown a curve, and something else appears.
How long were you caregiving your husband?
Almost 8 years.
8 years. But you
yes.
Did he die at home?
My husband fell 3 weeks before he died, and he died in
a care facility.
Care facility.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. 8 years is an amazing length mm-hmm. of time.
It is a long time.
An amazing length of time. Millie's attitude or mental attitude is just so impressive. Mm-hmm. It seems that it's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. I would think it is remarkable.
Yeah.
Millie is remarkable, but also the attitude and the commitment that you made.
Yeah.
And I think that there are, again, it goes to expectations, is that some people who are listening right now, or you might even know of others who really, for whatever reasons, could not do that. And it is okay.
Can't
That's
get
right.
there.
No, it
is.
No.
I think it's an unusual.
Fortunately or unfortunately, it is not that unusual. There are many people who are caretaking for years and years.
I'm saying Millie's
attitude.
Her attitude.
Oh, your attitude is
unusual.
Yeah. Although there are a lot of people who find that, again, there's moments of caretaking that really are rich for them and valuable.
Yes. Absolutely.
But it is challenging, particularly when there are adult children taking care of parents mm-hmm. who did not have a good
relationship
with those parents.
Yeah.
And
yes.
they are
or spouses
thrust,
who didn't
or spouses,
have a good relationship.
And they're thrust in an environment, in a situation where it could be combative, it could be critical and judgmental, it can be very challenging. And so I do want people to have the most realistic expectations they can. Most people do the best they can.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely do think that they do the best that they can. And I did want to say, you Millie, are someone who, you know, it's amazing to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say to others who don't feel that kind of strength of conviction, it doesn't mean they're bad people.
I'd like to add that Millie is quite a role model.
Yes.
And she continues to come to the support groups as a graduate and to share her knowledge and her understanding of caregiving and to help others along the way. And and she doesn't have to do that, but she chooses to because she has a lot to offer.
Yes. Let's talk about maybe on the other side of the spectrum. You know, well, and I'll give an example of my mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom and dad my dad was a military man and, you know, kind of a John Wayne and, you know, a private person. And he and my mom had been together for 59 years, very private people. The idea of reaching out to a community and asking them to help.
Absolutely.
Just impossible. It really wasn't in their repertoire.
No.
You know, so she was the caregiver for him, and even in her 80s, continued to expect of herself to caregive at the same level, maintaining the same cleanliness of house, maintaining the same level of laundry. And now he couldn't do the yards anymore, so the yards still had to be the same level of pristine. Only she was the person that had to do this. And as she continued to decline the demands on herself, she was the only one in the family that drove. He never drove. So she, you know, as I watched her, you know, as they continued in this lifestyle, it was heartbreaking to watch these two people who could not, would not reach out for help. But for her to have done so would have been so humiliating.
Yes.
For me to bring in caregivers, which I tried to do, was they didn't want strangers in their home.
No.
And there is an aspect, I think, that each of us has to be respectful of an individual's choice in that. And you probably gave your mom, that example, the space to feel empowered. She was empowered to do this. And as challenging as that was for you, that gave her those choices. And there are times, I think one of the most difficult decisions people have to make, particularly adult children, is when do we step in? And I think there are times that is there cognitive impairment with the person who's being taken care of, but the caregiver is
not
so
making good choices,
depleted. And that's a horrendous decision for you, for the adult child,
yes,
to have to make, but it is vital sometimes to be able to go in and help in a way that they might not like. I think that's important.
That was something that towards the end of my husband's illness, those last few months, the physical care became very, very difficult.
Sure.
And then you're losing sleep. Mm-hmm. And that's where my children started to really speak to me that we needed to be considering a change. And that's coming to terms with just because you're not doing every little thing that needs to be done, you're still a caregiver.
Yes.
You're still taking responsibility for that person.
You're still stepping forward.
Yes, you are. And whether you're doing everything or not, and it's perfectly all right to relinquish that care to someone else. As these illnesses progress, I think you have to adjust your expectations of yourself and what you can do.
Mm-hmm. I've worked with families over the years, and oftentimes when the decision to place their loved one in a care facility occurs, it's probably one of the most wrenching decisions of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been my experience that oftentimes after that decision is made and the exhausted caregiver does place their loved one in a care facility, they come back to the support group and they say, it's working out.
Right.
I expected it to be horrible, and the care is wonderful, and now exactly. I can be the wife again. I'm not the maid and the changing the bed and the adult diapers. I can be sitting next to him holding his hand and looking into his eyes, and someone else is doing the hard physical care. And it's a relief. And I just,
well,
so many people are afraid of that transition, and oftentimes it turns out to be the best decision.
Mm-hmm. And any decision that is made, there are consequences. To not place, there's consequences. To place, there's consequences.
Absolutely.
So it's, you can't avoid the consequences to making those decisions. It's how do we best handle the decision that's gonna that we choose.
Kathy, what are some of the more frequent challenges that you see that you're helping caregivers deal with in their caregiving?
I think the biggest thing that I see, or the biggest challenge for caregivers, is the expectations. Expectations they have of themselves, maybe some of the history that they have, if it's a husband taking care of a wife or an adult child. The expectations need to be realistic, and they change over time, and that is something that is really hard for all of us. Whether you're parents or whether you are workers, we have to be able to adapt. So the expectations is a key. And the other is managing the extreme emotions that go. It's one thing to manage everyday living. It's another to have the extreme emotions, like you were describing, Chris, about the frustration and the disappointment and the worry, the anxiety that you felt watching your parents.
Sure.
You wanted to be respectful of them, and yet you felt helpless and powerless. And there's a sense of inadequacy sometimes that people have to cope with. I can't do enough. What do I do now?
Right.
So there's I would say the expectations and dealing with emotions are really challenging. And there's lots of, you mentioned Millie, an action plan. There's lots of ways people can cope with this. Doesn't mean it's easy, but there are definitely strategies that people can use to cope with it.
When you're working with families and you're trying to give in coping strategies, what type of strategies seem to be helpful?
The number one, I would say, is don't reinvent the wheel. The number one is attend the classes, go online. Mm. There's information out there.
Find what's there.
Find what's there. Even if it's just a snippet, that's fine. If they can go to a support group, fabulous. That's great. So that's one. The other is kind of chunking it down. It's almost like a one day at a time. If you can just look at today, and if today was good, great. Okay, just enjoy that. And if it's not, oh, there's tomorrow.
Right.
So chunking it down, making it so that I can only focus, like Millie, you said about a 2-minute shower. Oh, great. And I comb my hair today. Great.
Yeah.
And I haven't paid the bills or done the taxes. Well, maybe tomorrow. Mm-hmm. There are so many. There are so many burdens on caretakers. So chunking it down is really key, and then setting realistic goals. So using resources, doing the best you can. I don't mean to sound placating with that.
No, not at all.
Sometimes all we can do is one day at a time.
Well, and I think you brought it up, Alice, too, is we have sometimes complex lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have families that there's been divorces in the families and remarriages. We're seeing people that are getting remarried later in life.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
So all of a sudden now they've got children that they really, you know, these are stepchildren they really don't have much of a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have gotten married when they were 72, mm-hmm. and these adult children are in their 50s, and now all of that comes to play, and you're caregiving my father, and you're not doing it right, and you're supposed to be doing this or mm-hmm. that, and it can get really ugly.
Very complex.
You know? Oh, yeah.
I remember a gentleman who had taken care of his wife, and she passed away from Alzheimer's, and he eventually remarried a woman he'd, like his girlfriend from high school long, long ago, and they reconnected, and he remarried, and then she got Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So he did the entire caregiving mm-hmm. times two.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an amazing, wonderful gentleman who stepped up and did caregiving, not
wow.
once, but twice.
Mm-hmm.
That was
mm-hmm.
very remarkable.
Yeah, there...
So, and again, I would say, in there are certain situations to get help, to get information, because there are many situations where there are second marriages and there are stepkids, and they might be second guessing the care, and there mm-hmm. are legal considerations, and
absolutely.
It can get very messy. And for a caregiver, not only are they losing their partner in that situation, but then they're almost in battle, and that's very challenging mm-hmm. for them.
And we have resources. We have mm-hmm. creative mediation in our community
mm-hmm.
for these very
mm-hmm.
difficult mm-hmm. family dynamics.
Absolutely.
I think pretty much we have resources
we have
for just
oh,
about anything if you start
absolutely.
Searching and, you know, asking the right questions.
I think sometimes it's difficult when people are thrown into a caregiving role mm-hmm. quickly. I think if a illness progresses over a period of time, there may be an ability to capture resources. Sometimes an accident happens and all of a sudden someone is now a full-time caregiver for someone
yes.
who a stroke
brain you know, injury
brain
yeah.
injury may happen mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're in the moment just trying to
catch up
mm-hmm. yeah and the idea that there's anything out of your world of bedpans and and just trying to, you know, mm-hmm. trying to maintain sanity doesn't exist. And
call Alice.
Call Alice.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if someone wanted to call you, how would they do that, Alice?
Well, my number in San Luis County is 805-534-9234. That's Coast Caregiver Resource Center. And the statewide number is 800-445-8106 for any caregiver resource center throughout California. And I know we have listeners that are in Monterey County.
Mm-hmm.
And Monterey County is served by Del Mar Caregiver Resource Center. And their phone is toll-free 888. I'm sorry. That phone number is area code 831-459-6639 in Monterey. And then in our county, Coast Caregivers covers San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. That's our region. And the toll-free number is 888-488-6555.
Okay, fantastic. And Kathy, in your practice too, do you focus on families who have caregiving challenges?
Yes, I do. Okay. It's a variety of. I work primarily with couples, and so it extends out
okay.
into that. So,
okay,
yes.
And to get a hold of you,
you can call 805-927-5020.
Okay. I want to thank my guest today, mm-hmm. Alice Crawford, family consultant and Coast Caregiver Resource Center, Millie Tyler, family caregiver and advocate.
Thank you.
And Kathy Brody, marriage and family therapist in private practice in Paso Robles and Cambria. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX. Please join us next Thursday
Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices.